Welcome again to Jim Brown's Outrigged Capercast. Thank you for coming. This issue is in response to a question that we received by email from a listener, and the answer to his question is coming a little late. He asks, what do I do with my boat in the event of a hurricane? Well, the hurricane season isn't over, although we've had some terrible ones this year. And of course, there have been many, many boats badly damaged or destroyed. And in the event of a direct hit, there's really not a whole lot we can do. If the wind gets up over 80 or 90 knots, it really starts throwing things around. But not all of us are involved in the direct hit zone. And this hurricane season is far from over. In fact, we have one brewing off the capes of North Carolina right now that may threaten us here in Virginia. So what do you do in the event of an approaching hurricane? Well, the first part of the answer concerns if the boat is in harbor or on land. At the end, I'll try to throw in a few of the standard storm tactics if indeed one were to get caught at sea in the event of a hurricane or any cyclonic or anticyclonic tropical weather. So no matter where your boat is, in the harbor or hauled out on the hard someplace, I think the number one answer to that question, what do I do with my boat, is take the mast down. This assumes that you have a sailboat, and it also assumes that there's some means of taking the mast down. You have to have a crane or a bridge handy, or the boat has to be designed with a tabernacle, such as in the case of the Sea Runner 31. And I have taken the mast down with an approaching hurricane. Now, the reason for that, of course, is that the windage on the mast, the drag of the mast, is what tends to tilt the boat up so that the wind can get under it and blow it away like a newspaper blowing down the street. It seems like a rather radical step, but if it is predicted that, as it has been here, that approaching is the strongest Atlantic hurricane on record, and it looks like you're in the bullseye, and if your boat is not insured, and even if it is insured, I think the best thing you can do for your boat, especially a multi-hull, is to take the mast down. My old friend Sam Bradfield, the hydrofoil guy, was a specialist in what he called boundary layer studies. And that refers to a fluid, air or water, flowing over a foil. He was the hydrofoil guy. How much different is the flow at the surface of the foil or at the surface of the mast, the bottom of the mast, than it is at the top of the mast or out away from the foil? And there really is a tremendous difference. We can talk about the face of the earth being a boundary. And one reason big boats can go so much faster than little boats is that they reach up into the wind. It blows a lot harder just a few yards above the surface. So, of course, to get the mast down, you have to remove the sails and remove the boom. So if you can't get the mast down, at least do that. Remove the sails and the boom and any awnings or whatever would catch the wind that's attached to the boat. Dodgers, boom tents, cockpit covers, anything fabric really should be removed. Of course, the deck should be stripped of anything loose and the hatches very securely dogged down. I think that one reason Scrimshaw was damaged, where she's hauled out there in central Florida during a recent blow, they had two, was that her owner, Bruce Matlack, was on the West Coast and I was in the Northeast and very much involved in other things. I couldn't go to the boat. Leaving the boat unattended is the real mistake. And if you can get back to your boat in the face of a hurricane, of course, you can do something like removing the sails, the boom, the mast, dogging down the hatches. Somebody needs to pay attention in the event of an approaching cyclone. There are so many variables, one would hope not to leave the boat in a marina. If it blows hard enough and the storm surge is strong enough, holy moly, it's going to take docks, pilings, boats, and all, and put them up in the middle of town. So answer number two is move your boat to a secure place. We have a very great opportunity with multi-hulls because we can sneak into shallow places. Now, of course, it'll help if the mast is down when you move it to a secure place. Mangroves are pretty good. Tight coves, bays, where there are big trees around, but not so close to the boat that if they fall, they'll land on the boat. And if indeed you can slide her up into a pocket someplace, let's hope it'll be so shallow that monohulls can't get there, or anything that would drag down on the boat as a result of anchors dragging during the blow. It sure helps to have a lot of line available to tie off to trees, other docks. But if all you've got is your anchors, it seems that there are two ways to approach anchoring. Which one you select depends on what the local territory is like. If you're in a place where there is high ground, mountains, hills, close to the harbor, the hurricane winds are going to be coming from several directions. They bounce off of the landforms and can change very quickly with violent gusts from different directions. And of course, hurricanes often have tornadoes in them. Sometimes lots of tornadoes. In which case, the wind can go around the clock faster than make your head swim. So in such conditions, it seems wise to anchor with as many anchors as you can get your hands on. Three at least, five is better. Set the anchors in a circle. Pull on them. If you have an engine in your boat or an outboard motor, every anchor that you set should be well set. Really yank on that baby with the full weight of the boat to make sure that it's very well engaged in the bottom. And then bring all the anchor roads together in the middle of the circle, tie them up even in a big knot if you have to, and then go with only a short road to the boat. This allows the boat to weathercock quickly, responding to differences in wind direction. On the other hand, if you're anchored in open water, and let's hope it's not so open that you're going to have a seaway running under the boat, if indeed you're in open water and you may have a seaway, the best protection is with lots of anchor road and a bridle to the bows of the multi-hull, to each bow of the multi-hull. In open water, the wind direction is likely to be much more steady, open water with low ground around. So one can put out anchors in, you know, two, three, four, five directions, again bring the roads together, and then take a long road, two of them, to each float bow of a trimaran or each bow of a catamaran. And there's a lot to be said about protecting against chafe at the boat. Chafing through anchor roads is such a common occurrence in hurricanes. The roads must be well protected where they come over the boat. Personally, I prefer to use snatch blocks, with the road going first through a block and then to a cleat on the boat with nothing in between the snatch block and the cleat, so that the stretch in the line for that distance, just between the cleat on the main hull bow, for instance, and the snatch block on the trimaran's float bow, that distance will allow enough stretch in the line to saw back and forth, and so it needs a snatch block to roll to prevent chafe in the line. There's a lot more about that in my book called The Case for the Cruising Trimaran. Now, there have been incidents of multi-hulls flying, actually being lifted up out of the water by hurricanes, especially when anchored to a long road. That is much less likely to happen if the mast is out of the boat. But if you're anchored in a place where it's very unlikely that there will be a seaway rolling under the boat, perhaps a storm surge where the water level rises, or a swell that's working its way in through lots of obstructions but no real seaway, then and only then do I suggest that you put some water in the boat to hold it down. Scrimshaw has a scuttle plug in each hull for that purpose. That is, in making frantic storm preparations, one can just simply unscrew a plug in the bottom of any of the three hulls and let some water in. I think maybe a 31-foot boat like Scrimshaw needs at least 1,000 pounds of water. That's roughly 100 gallons. I know it'll be a pain to pump it out, and if the storm doesn't come your way, you'll be cursing me all every stroke you take on the pump. But if you really want to prepare your boat for the worst, put some water in it to hold it down, unless, of course, you're anchored in a seaway. In which case, the weight of the water in the boat would be heaved back with the boat on every crest, and it would pull very hard on your anchor tackle. It's not the time to overload the boat with water if you're anchored in open water with not much protection and the likelihood of a real seaway running under the boat. Please forgive my pontificating about this stuff, but I've been through it a few times. I made it through 40 years of hurricanes with Scrimshaw. Lots of time in the tropics and a lot of time on the eastern Atlantic coast here, where she has dodged the bullet several times because of the trouble I've taken to keep her from getting blown away. I've heard too many stories about multi-hulls, Sea Runners included, being lifted up and simply blown away like a newspaper down the street. We had one 34-foot Sea Runner that was shown after the storm upside down in the harbor with a piling protruding up through her bottom. She flew far enough to actually go down over a piling that punctured the cabin top, the sole, through the bottom of the boat, and kept it from blowing any farther. Okay, answer number 3 concerns boats that are hauled out on the hard, stored out of the water for the hurricane season. Believe me, this can be just as dangerous as leaving the boat in the water. Why? 2 reasons. Because the boat can be blown off of its dry dock blocking and fall, and then slide in the wind. The second part, other boats can be blown into it. It can have, you know, an amazing variety of stuff thrown at it by hard winds, including coconuts, which turn into cannonballs. So hauling your boat out in a boatyard is not necessarily safer than leaving it in the water if you can find a nice tight place to leave it, particularly one where there are no other boats around. So I personally think that if the boat is hauled out, it ought to be blocked as low to the ground as possible. If you're going to leave it for months and not come back until the end of October in order to paint the bottom, then you got to jack it up in order to get under it, but that'll be by the end of the hurricane season. No matter how much trouble they take with boats to keep them upright with all kinds of blocking and jack stands and so on, when the wind really starts to howl, especially if the mast is up, it can get blown over. Now, a monohull is not so likely to get blown away, but it can fall on you. The ballast keel might keep it in its position, but it can fall pretty hard one way or the other. And furthermore, if there is to be a real storm surge, the water may come up high enough to float the thing away. It depends on how high the ground is and how high the surge is. So if the bottom of your boat is strong enough to be set straight on the ground, and there are a lot of multi-hulls around, particularly those that are made of foam sandwich materials that do not take well to dry dock blocking or being placed on the ground. So due care must be taken. Set her down on tires or piles of carpet or stacks of scrap foam or something in order to distribute the weight, but get her bottom as close to the ground as possible. And furthermore, if you really want to get serious about it, get the backhoe in there, dig a big hole for the main hull of a trimaran, set her down in the hole so that her floats are now, the float keels are touching the ground. Of course, if the bottom of the hole is rocky or filled with roots or whatever, you got to put some padding in there too. But if you get her clear of other boats, take the mast down, dig a hole, set her in it, and put some water in her, she's probably going to get through the storm okay. Again, about 1,000 pounds of water, half a ton of water in a, say, a 30 or 35 footer. Anything you can do to keep the wind from just blowing her away. Now, if she's in a location that's vulnerable to storm surge, where the tide may come up 10 feet or more above its usual high, she may float away. And so, if she's sitting on the hard or in a hole, anywhere where the water level is likely to climb way up, then you better tie her to something. Tie her off to whatever you can get, you know. Even bury your own anchors and tie her to that so that she doesn't float away in the event of a very high storm surge. Now, if your boat is not insured, I think you're much more likely to take such drastic precautions. And really, we usually have 2 or 3 days now in order to make such precautions. You can do all of this in one day if you've got a backhoe or whatever, and you ought to have plenty of line and plenty of anchors. Now, the last thing I would recommend is for anyone to stay on his boat or her boat during a hurricane. Do the best you can and get away. Get into a modern steel-reinforced concrete building like a good motel or whatever. If you've got a storm coming, geez, the last thing you want to do is go flying with your boat. It used to be that we had very poor information about the vagaries of the course of a hurricane, but now we've got these wonderful prediction models, and if you're in the crosshairs, you'll probably know it 2 or 3 days ahead of time. Get going with preparations. Well, let's talk a little bit about what happens in, you know, a major blow offshore. It happens that you get caught out. If you do, incidentally, it's kind of dumb. Irving Johnson sailed around the world, what was it, 4 times? 8 times? I can't remember. And he never ran into foul weather because he stayed out of the wrong ocean at the right time of year. But if you do get caught out, there are a couple of rules of thumb that can help very much. If you're sailing in the cyclone season, and, you know, I've been dumb enough to do this, Joanna and I got caught in that Chubasco down off of Baja, the most telltale symptom of an approaching cyclonic storm is that the day ahead, even 2 days ahead, the eastern sky at sunrise is brilliantly flaming orange. That's the old bit about red sky in the morning, sailors take warning. The next thing, if you're out at sea, and if it's not pouring rain or blowing so hard you can't see, look for a swell. A long swell, so long that the crests are so far apart that you can hardly see two of them at the same time. Couple thousand yards apart. It helps to stand up on the cabin top or even climb the mast to the first spreader or whatever and look out on the ocean with all the parallax your vision will provide to detect an approaching long swell. The disturbance is probably in the direction from which the swell is coming. And if you're not sure, if you still don't have any indication, if your radio isn't telling you and your weather facts and all that modern stuff we have to deal with now that we never used to have, if you're really in the dark about where the storm is and it starts to blow, and if it's a cyclonic storm, that if it's rotating counterclockwise in the northern hemisphere, clockwise in the southern hemisphere, if you're in the northern hemisphere, face the wind. The storm center is probably on your right. If you're in the southern hemisphere, face the wind. The storm center is probably on your left. In either case, go the other way. Especially with a multi-hull, if she's got some speed on her, You can do a lot to get away from the worst part of a storm. Now, there's a bit more to it. If the storm center is on your right and you're facing into the wind, don't go straight left. Go left, but maybe 10 o'clock left, or as close to the wind as you can sail in the conditions that you have. That is, you want to try to evade the storm center by sailing into the wind. You don't have to strap it down real tight. You probably can if it's blowing hard. Put up storm sails and work your way across and into the wind to the best of your ability with reasonable comfort and to keep from beating up the boat. But when you're continuing into the wind, if the seaway becomes so nasty that the breakers, the white horses passing under the boat pretty much stop the boat, that is, when a wave goes by and you drop down onto the back of the wave, if you've been slammed so hard that you're no longer moving forward with good steerage, then it's time to start bearing off. Slack off onto a reach, let the sails out a bit. If you don't like the seas boarding over your, let's say if you're in the northern hemisphere, it'd be coming over your starboard side. Sailing on a reach in really rough conditions can be kind of risky, and it can be very uncomfortable because the waves break on deck. So now, and I think only now, is the time to consider bearing off and running down with the waves. That is, as they call, running off. And in a multi-hull, you're going to get to going so dang fast that it'll scare the living pee out of you. Even if you only have up a little bit of storm sail, the boat's going to be going in great spurts of speed, probably in the high teens at times, up into the 20s with faster boats. And that requires careful helmsmanship. And if the crew is already beat up, you're dog-tired, cold, tired, hungry, wet, seasick, and scared, then start dragging stuff. Again, there's a lot more about this in my book, The Case for the Cruising Trimaran. The tactics explained there have been used with good success by a number of sailors that I've heard from. The tire drogue, the parachute sea anchor, the linear drogue, many devices available now for running off in a storm. Storm drogues don't work well unless you leave a little sail up. You got to have a little bit of sail so as to pull on that drogue. If you're not pulling on it, it's not going to really straighten you out. Put your stern to the waves, and it's not going to really ease the steering so that you can actually set the self-steering device and go below. You need some speed through the water for the rudder, the self-steering vane, and the drogue to really work. Anything will help, but it can get to be too much. That is, putting out a parachute for running down can hold the boat back so as to drag it backwards through the waves. A big parachute can be almost like anchoring to the bottom, and it may not be wise to use that for running down. A parachute sea anchor is better set from the bows by a bridle, to make sure that the boat stays head to sea, almost stopped, even in terrible conditions. That's the tactic to be used if you don't have sea room behind you. Now, I don't claim to be experienced in all of these conditions that I've mentioned. A lot of my information comes from my clients and other boat nuts that I've known and spoken with about, you know, storm survival over the years. And there is some late information that may be the best trusted information. I've never heard it expressed better than by my old black fisherman neighbor Andrew Diggs, who lived across the river from me here and spent years and years at sea. And he said, "Jim, I never did see a drifting boat get in trouble." And what he meant by that was, if you're caught in heavy weather, Maybe the best thing you can do is nothing at all. You know, try to reduce the windage as best you can. It's hard to take the mast down if you're at sea, although that's a tactic that has been used, particularly by old fishermen. Cut your poles! But you can certainly get the sails off of her, even the mainsail, with the boom. For instance, if you drop the main, put the cover on it, no, it'd be blowing too hard, but wrap it up, really lash it down to the boom, and then open the gate and let the sail slides come out the bottom of the track, and you can probably take the whole thing and poke it down into the cabin, get it out of the wind. And just let the boat drift. Now, there are qualifiers here. A drifting boat is probably going to drift beam on, and that means you may have waves jumping aboard. In boats with centerboards or daggerboards, of course, pull up the boards. Let the boat slide if it gets hit on the beam. Dick Newick always said that he thought that one line from one float bow out to a small parachute sea anchor was the way to ride out heavy weather. Or you could put it from one float stern and let her run off, just to keep the beam ends from getting bashed by the waves. And there is some evidence, modern evidence, to suggest that that's the way to handle it. There are those terrible storms that occurred in races down under off of Australia and New Zealand, where the boats that survived, including the multi-hulls, and all the multi-hulls survived, came through some terrible conditions, and they were such that the people could do nothing. There was nothing the crew could do except go down below and hang on. Try not to get thrown out of your bunk or burned by trying to cook something on the stove. Eat cold food. It's very likely that the boat can take a lot more than the crew. We've heard of several examples, where people got caught in heavy weather, freaked out, called for help. Ship comes along, takes them off by whatever means, a very dangerous transition, incidentally. Three of my sea runner people have been killed by trying to get from their boat onto a freighter as the boat was drifting down on them and rolling. It just ground them up between the sea runner and the ship. So making a mid-ocean transfer from one boat to another is very dangerous. But there are several amazing examples. For instance, Fred Yates has told us about his in a previous early podcast. And they managed to get to the security of the big ship and later learned that their boat was found in fine conditions 200 miles away, but they had lost everything in the boat. They had no money, no way to mount an expedition to go and find it. So, final advice, I think, no matter how scared you get, how sick, how beat up, cold, tired, hungry, wet, and seasick, no matter how bad it gets, I think the best thing to do is to stay with the boat if the boat is floating properly. Of course, if she's breaking up or going down, it's time to holler for help. And, at least in U.S. waters, and there are so many ways to holler for help these days. Cell phones, sat phones, spot beacons, long-range radio, and, hey, EPIRBs. EPIRBs have saved more than one of my clients. Listen to that podcast about Lance Leonard. Well, anyway, that's enough to scare the daylights out of anybody. I don't mean to. Well, I'll finish off by saying, hey, with that knowledge in hand, with all of that knowledge in hand, I hope that what it does is give you some alternative, some confidence, some means ready in hand to deal with what Phil Well used to call calamity. And go sailing. Okay? Bye-bye.